Hello and welcome to Climate Emergency Manchester. I'm Lauren and on the Scrutiny Roundtable today I've got Chloe, Jackie and Simon. Hi everyone, how are you doing?
Hi, fine, thank you.
Nice to be here.
Great, and a special thank you to you, Jackie, for hosting us in your living room today.
You're very welcome.
This is actually the first time, Jackie, you've been on the roundtable, I think, since we did the demo back in January, was it?
Oh, January, February, March, a lot has changed since then.
Upstairs in Sandbar with the leaky windows and the fire engines going on outside, it was me, Jackie and Chloe.
Do you think any listeners have followed us all the way through since then?
I mean, I did. Did you?
Yeah.
And did you?
Yeah, Jackie? Yeah.
That's three of us then.
Three of us.
So we've got lots to cover today as we board the magic roundabout that is the Manchester City Council scrutiny. We have an update on the disappearing carbon budget, another biodiversity strategy, recycling and fly tipping, and a philosophical look at leadership. For new listeners, check out episodes 1 to 3 for short 3-minute explainers on scrutiny, climate budgets, and the key organisations that we'll talk about. So let's get into it. So we've got two quite similarly named reports today. So we've got the Manchester's annual climate change report, which is reported by the Manchester Climate Change Agency. And we've got Manchester City Council Climate Change Action Plan, which we sometimes call the CCAP. Yeah. Quarterly progress report for quarter two. So similarly named, similarly useless. So shall we start with the annual climate change report then? So if you're not familiar with a carbon budget, you can find a link to the carbon budget graph in the show notes. So take a look at it now, because in a few years it'll be gone forever. Do you want to do the bit about the tweets?
Oh my God, the tweets. The most Manchester City Council and its beloved climate change agency can say is, in a little tweet, we're not on track, or we're off track. With a video of a cute little bee doing archery practice and ever so slightly missing the mark.
The bee seems sadder than previous bees that I've seen. That's my main observation as to what's changed.
Yeah, it looks sadder, and yeah, it really shouldn't be picking up a bow and arrow. The arrow dropped by its knees. Bees have knees, don't they?
The bee's knees.
The bee's knees, yeah.
It's not the bee's knees.
It's not the bee's knees.
Not even the bee's arse.
And if its sense of direction's as bad as Manchester's carbon budget, then I don't hold much hope of it making it back to the hive.
But beyond this, what was that video trying to say? It was advertising a survey?
Yeah.
It wasn't just saying we're not on track and making a big fuss about it. It was saying, fill in a survey.
You tell us what we should do.
Yeah. Mm.
Or just ignore that we've made this video. It was just sort of didn't come across like they were actually trying to get people's attention. It was like, yeah, we've done something. It's just this thing, and you'll easily miss it in a Twitter feed.
So that in a few years we can say, well, we knew when we tried, you know, we made the video and we asked people for their opinions on what we should do, and then We missed the target.
And we've been talking for months about them making more of an effort, talking about individuals in the council and the agency and the council as the council, talking about this more explicitly. They probably think they've done that now, because to be fair to them, we should probably try and be fair to them, Bev Craig tweeted about it, the leader of the council. Tracy Rawlins, the exec member for the environment, tweeted about it. The Climate Agency tweeted about it with that cute little video. It was in a Manchester City Council email newsletter, not in the header. It wasn't mentioned in the header. I stumbled across it. And it had a link to a web page that you could read more about. It didn't talk about the carbon budget, but it talked about how we are not on track. We are off track. But the closest we can get to it is saying, we're not on track. It doesn't say anything about, we have a carbon budget of 15 million tonnes. We're going to have used it all by the next few years, by 2027 at the latest. It just doesn't go far enough.
And there's at least one main word missing, which is why. Why are we not on track? There should be at least one extra slide for that B to fly across, which says why we're not on track.
The detail of that in the report showed that, as you'll be reminded if you listen back to episode 3, which was the carbon budgets at Explain Earth, the original plan was 13% year-on-year reductions. We fucked that up. Last year, they told us we needed to reduce by 16% year-on-year. We reported that on the podcast more recently. And now it's telling us we need to reduce by 21% year-on-year.
Sharp intake of breath.
Yeah. If in case the mic hasn't picked that up, we all went...
There was definitely a sense of panic and frustration in the scrutiny meeting, I think. So Annette Wright seemed to be quite frustrated, saying, you know, we're here again with another report that just tells us that we're even more off track than we were last time. What is going to change? What can we do? We're clearly not doing enough. And how do we stop ourselves from the next time we get together just having the same conversation again?
And it came back to that point that we've made. This podcast has been a bit like Groundhog Day because we are talking about a lot of the same themes every single time, but that just goes to show how woeful the action's been. So this idea, and I'm going to quote from the report, says, does not identify new priorities for next year, brackets, as previous annual reports did, as those have been captured in granular detail in the 2022 update to the framework. That's the document that came to scrutiny in September. And that really was meant to show us that all the priorities of what we need to do with what impact that will have in terms of measurable targets. But the trouble is it doesn't actually identify any priorities. If you say a report, here's a load of things, they're all really important, that's not prioritization. So we still have a list of actions, yes, but no prioritization. We don't know what's been committed to. We don't know what the council is actually going to do as a result of the framework. And we've no idea yet when we might have that idea.
So was this sense of panic, you said, and what was the other word? Despair?
Frustration.
Frustration. Was that shared more widely, or was it just some lone voices?
No, so I think Annette Wright, Carol Culley said she was glass half empty. Yeah. And Mandy Shilton-Godwin as well also seemed quite concerned.
Some of those have at times been more upbeat.
Yeah, I think that definitely Mandy tends to try and look on the bright side of things, which not always helpful.
It's been terribly frustrating. Yeah. You know, if you can see what needs to be done, but the mechanisms just aren't there to get it off the ground. Mm-hmm. So it just keeps stalling.
Yeah, so it was Eve Holt was pushing to make a decision on which of the two scenarios we were going to go with, that the agency had put forward in the framework last time. So they've kind of said we could go with this one or that one, but they, for some reason, weren't in a position to make that decision on the council's behalf.
So who's going to make it?
That's the point. So the carbon budget scenario is in the show notes for episode 7.2, I think. And it showed as we thought, 13 or 16% year-on-year, or a sort of a more magical thinking scenario, or we use up, which is the more likely one at the moment, use up the carbon budget by 2026 or 7. And she said, I got that as well, later down. The Climate Change Agency in partnership didn't recommend the carbon budget preferred pathway. If they can't do it, who can?
So as well as the pathways, what you've just said is like a microcosm for how nothing can happen in a bureaucracy. So we first saw those scenarios in end of June, start of July, in draft form. But they've been, you know, they've been come up before then, but they've been in the public domain for at least 4 months, and nobody can quite make a decision. So already now we're into middle of October. That's just another 4 months lost about something where the work has already been done in terms of coming up with those scenarios.
It's like we know how to write a framework and write a report, but then when it gets to actually doing the work, we just are paralysed.
Yeah, that's the word, paralysis, because that came up in the Mills report on homelessness as well within the council. It's like this sort of paralysis. And reading that, it really resonated with what I've observed listening to the scrutiny committees as well. And it's the same organisation, so...
Yeah. So Annette Wright also asked about the other directorates of the council, such as planning and highways. Are they on board? How do we get them to take this seriously? Like, I mean, I don't know what the lines of communication are between the scrutiny committee and the rest of the council. How do they feed into the frameworks and their work plans? I've got no idea.
Well, it's all obscured. All that stuff's obscured, isn't it? We don't, you know, we're not party to it because there's, you know, the opposition's so small. All the ideas and the debates happen behind closed doors, so we just can't see what's going on. But I thought it was good that Annette really quite stridently said about, you know, getting this information from the exec. But is that going to be actioned? Will we get the information from the exec? I suppose we'll wait to see what comes out in the minutes.
She asked for that.
She did.
But what came back? I think it was...
Nothing tangible that I could reiterate straight off. But I suppose, you know, if it's been noted in the minutes, maybe that means it will happen. It ought to happen.
It was noted. Annette Wright, Councillor for Hume, said, I'd like to see reports from the different execs about what they're doing. Tracy Rawlins, who is the exec for the environment, said, essentially, we'll get a report from the Zero Carbon Working Group and get the execs to input into that. So it could be... Take her at that description, quite a useful report. It might not be, and it might not have much input from the different execs, so we wait and see. But the chair, Mandy Shilton Godwin, who is a councillor for Chorlton Park, did off the back of that say one of the recommendations will be we have some new reports coming to scrutiny, and one of those was about, I think I've got it down as leadership. Leadership, lobbying, communications. So if that does pull out some of the things we've been talking about, how the council talks about itself, and how the different functions or directorates are all working together, then something good could come out of it.
So there would be a report on leadership, a report on lobbying, particularly to national government?
I suspect so, yeah.
And then comms... How we're communicating it. Yeah. Well, I don't think just changing formats the report is going to solve everything, but something clearly needs to change with these reports as well.
I wonder who ensures that it's all, you know, they talk about cross-cutting, you know, across the scrutiny committees and you know, the directorates. Who's actually tracking whether or not it is actually cross-cutting? Yeah, I think it was in economy that Mandy went along to that meeting and said, we agreed something in the environment and climate change that was meant to be brought to this meeting. Why hasn't it been brought to this meeting? And I thought, oh, maybe that's what the cross-cutting means, that, you know, somebody needs to be saying and tracing, you know, if these things are actually cross-cutting or not. Because if they're not, they're just sort of rolling into a corner. Mm-hmm. And all the stuff that they're doing on environment and climate change, they're coming up with stuff. And if it's not being actioned, you know, it's just like hot air, isn't it?
I have noticed more chairs sitting in on other scrutiny meetings that are not their own. So it's good to hear that that's happening and that they sometimes speak up. Still feels a little bit like single fault point of failure. So if one of them was having, you know, just didn't quite pick up that that was something they'd said elsewhere, you know, just having one person in the room supposed to be picking up on it.
It needs to be much more robust than that, doesn't it? If, you know, if the intention is you know, to have it sort of spreading out almost like a net, so that at every opportunity, you know, when something comes up, it's like, yeah, we talked about this and this is what we need to do. And then it starts becoming more tangible.
I think the next point about the report from the exec is not just that they are spokespeople for a particular area. So they were, here's some extra information to input on my bit, but they are the leaders, and somebody else in the core group who's not on the podcast today has worked a lot for kind of large companies with a lot of execs. And he says that before he encountered this executive, when he heard the word executive, he associated it with somebody who, sweary version, got shit done. That's what he thought. Some execs, they just get this stuff done. They're not just somebody who, you know, represents an area. And I think he certainly found that culture strange. Well, okay, this person's executive, but what do they actually do? Whereas he thinks of execs as the good ones as being, right, stuff happens.
There's a really interesting point I've got in my notes around leadership. I've got it as a thread throughout environment scrutiny in several ways, and it comes on maybe a bit more in CCAP. But there's a sense now that with the way that they are communicating a bit more, individuals and as the council and as the agency, and the way that they're talking about themselves in these reports, that they are understanding at least their position in all this much better than they did a year ago. Not in the way that we'd like them to, not as well as we'd like them to, but they are starting to see themselves as leaders. And they weren't talking that way, as far as I remember, at least, a year ago. It was all about how this is, we are setting a good example. Now, that's a key aspect of leadership, but it is not leadership in and of itself. So maybe that is an improvement.
It's something to keep an eye on.
A couple of things that really jumped out to me. We've said it already, Annette. Right, banging the drum for measurable targets. Another year of terrible figures is baked in. But if we don't get measurable targets, we'll get the same year after. We've already said that. But it was the response that Sam Nicholson, the director of the Climate Change Agency, came back saying, the framework 2.0, or the updated framework, which is what has all those priorities, their words. Framework 2.0 gives us better quantifiable priorities. Metrics will be more bottom up, surfacing good work that's happening. Future reports will surface that to make us feel positive and inspire us to do more.
Ooh.
What is the ooh, the positive, or the use of surfacing as a verb?
All of it, really.
I hate that.
It's just word salad.
Yeah, bottom up. That's a bit more of like the low-hanging fruit thing. Turning to the public.
I'm not sure. When she talks about bottom up metrics, I think it's about saying, the metrics we rely on to date are the stuff that we get top down from the government. They're 2 years out of date. They're not useful in us working out how we get to where we need to be. We need more bottom-up metrics that maybe won't be completely accurate, as in they won't be from the government qualified in that way. But metrics like, we have retrofitted so many houses this year. We have taken away so many car parking spaces, we have traffic levels, cyclist numbers on public transport. Those are more bottom-up.
So metrics. Manchester based.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Things we have better access to, but maybe aren't, they won't directly tell us this is how many tons of carbon we've removed from the atmosphere. But we can say, to get to this overall target, we need to, for example, with retrofit 84,000 homes, I think it was. So you've got a clear target then that you can measure to say, well, this is how many of that 84 we've done. So you can estimate carbon reductions even if you don't have top-down data on it.
If Samantha is listening, I would let her know that I'd be keen to hear metrics that aren't just those that are positive. We're open to that as well. If she's got some ones that don't make us feel good, we'd still like to see them. Don't feel you just have to pick the inspiring metrics.
Tell us the truth.
Oh, that would be lovely.
So, a little reminder on where we are with the carbon budget. Back in episode 3, we were looking at 13% year on year that we would need to reduce our carbon emissions. And that then rose to 16%. And now, so it's 21% to hit 50% by 2025. No?
So is that just... the overall plan to 2038 is in it breaking down into 5-year increments.
Okay.
The 5-year one at the moment is already gone.
Okay. All right. So we now have to reduce 21% year on year to be zero carbon in 2038.
Yeah. And again, we have talked about that, and we've talked about it on different episodes. The context of that, the best year we've had so far was 2020, and we were locked down. That got us to 12%. So now it's a massive increase on 2020. We actually increased 6% on, it's estimated, emissions increased 6% compared to 2020. And that is to be expected. We came out of lockdown. But that's the point that we need to understand, really. It's not a one-hit wonder. We got near to the target in 2020 and have completely missed it the year after. Where these targets, we need to hit them year in, year out, every year until 2038. There is no room for slipping. And we're not even slipping here. We are just woefully behind.
Plummeting.
One of the things that I was a bit surprised to see, and I think it's to do with the national government and what they called the hostile environment coming from the national government. But Eve Holt talked about green growth and even degrowth. Mm. Has there been a debate on that in the Climate Change Agency or partnership? And the short answer was no, there hasn't.
No. So she said something along the lines of they were focusing on the practical actions around transition to low carbon alternatives rather than debating degrowth or green growth. So we're not in the anti-growth coalition.
We are. We're on a podcast.
Well, yes. No, we are. Yeah. But Manchester City Council is not.
No. Well, if you're left wing, you're in the anti-growth coalition as well, I believe. So they probably are. And also some Tories as well, according to Liz Truss. I think it's probably worth putting in on that, on the question of growth or degrowth. Lot of scare stories out there about degrowth. If that's new to you, it's worth looking into. And I think we can recommend our friends at Steady State Manchester. Yeah. Maybe I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But it's this, the way I understand it, tell me if I get this wrong, but it's this idea of equality and increased well-being used to be quite well tied to economic growth. And so economic growth delivered the things we wanted in society, but that's sort of been divorced from growth now. And so we're just getting inequality rather than increased well-being. So the question about degrowth is, instead of focusing on the metric that you think might deliver increased well-being, focus on increased well-being instead.
Yeah. Even the metric that they use for economic growth, GDP, is fairly useless these days, and countries like New Zealand have scrapped that as how they measure growth, and they have different ways of measuring well-being.
So it's not about let's return to medieval days.
No.
It's about saying, how can we use the pie that we've got so that everyone gets a bit, and just different ways of measuring things. You focus on it in a different way, you might actually get a different outcome.
What slightly worries me about that answer, we're not concerned that we're focusing on practical instead, is there isn't a thing of where you just focus on practical things, putting it in a wider
it
context.
It sounds like we're not expecting anybody to make any changes to the way they live their lives. We're just going to find alternative ways of doing the exact same things that we do now, but that will be low carbon, which is a fantasy. It's not going to happen. I mean, Eve Holt did talk a bit about I think it was when Councillor Nunney asked about aviation emissions, in that UK aviation emissions had apparently dropped, but Manchester's had increased, and what was going on with that. And then Eve Holt started talking about, you know, we know a lot of these flights are taken by the same people. A lot of it's businesses or wealthy people who are travelling a lot. So are we expecting that those wealthy people will change their behaviour in any way?
I am, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to have to give them incentives or reasons to change their behaviour. Let's work on the basis that they're not one or two might, but they're not. So, you know, the classic ones are like frequent flyer levies.
Yeah, it's carrot or stick, yeah. Or both. Yeah, all of that sort of got summed up as the response was aviation's coming to scrutiny in January, I think.
Coming back in January.
So we'll report about it then, which I can understand if they can't give a solid answer, but sometimes that can be used to swerve giving any sort of an answer. The other thing that that stood out on the aviation question from Rob Nunney was around how the focus from the council and all councils, I think, and the national government focusing on jet zero for Manchester, that's a bit of a flawed yardstick, he said, because jet zero and the national government is focusing on 2050 as a deadline, whereas we're focusing on 2038. So we can't just say we're not going to worry about aviation. We'll let that be done at a national level in the jet zero project, because it won't be delivered in time.
The green growth and degrowth sort of admission that no, we've not done anything about, you know, debating that. When I heard that, I also thought you don't want to debate things that are going to cause ripples through, you know, the majority, Labour majority either. So it's like, all right, well, we just won't talk about it then, and we'll just keep going around in these ever-decreasing circles.
It sounds like they're trying to draw a distinction between we're doing practical stuff that makes difference, and this is just debates that go round in circles, debating big ideas, trying to separate themselves between talking and action.
But we've tried to focus on the practical actions for years now, and we've got nowhere. So maybe what's required is a complete change of track, you know, thinking about the problem differently.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, again, my understanding to all this comes back to there's nothing non-practical around the idea of if you get away from the labels and the just automatically assuming it's some sort of extreme ideology, it's this idea of where are you placing your focus? That's quite practical.
Yeah, very.
I'm going to work towards growth as the measure, the measurable target, which we keep coming back to, as a way of getting to zero carbon, or I'm going to focus on different measures that look at things differently. Basically, I encourage everyone just to not get freaked out by these sorts of labels and to look into it.
As you said, we'll include some links to Steady State Manchester, who have an array of resources, some shorter, some longer. So whatever your levels of interest.
Switching now to the CCAP, which is the Climate Change Action Plan quarterly update. So a reminder to listeners, we're moving now from the city's overall carbon budget to emissions that Manchester City Council is directly accountable for, which is around 2% of the city's total emissions. So the Manchester City Council CCAP sets a target for the council to reduce its direct CO2 emissions by 50% between 2020 and 2025, based on a 13% year-on-year reduction trajectory to reach zero carbon by 2038. But we already know that's out the window now.
Well, a lot of the same numbers bouncing around here, but actually, as you said, we're talking about the council's carbon budget now. So their 13% year-on-year reduction is going quite well. They're on track. We're the ones that, well, the city is the ones that isn't. What really jumped out to me in their report, and we touched on it a moment ago, is the way suddenly the council's talking itself. So it says that the report recognises the council's unique leadership role in supporting and influencing the city to reduce its emissions and in ensuring that the city's residents are protected from the impacts of climate change. I've never heard them talk about themselves in that way. It's always been, it's the agency's job, or it's everyone's job. We're all in this together. They've never said, we are uniquely responsible for leading in this space.
I wonder if they're slightly rattled by having a formal opposition now and realising that they better pull the socks up.
And a snarky group of activists who keep banging on about it, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an interesting development.
Certainly is. I think it's really rattled them, actually. Even though it's like, you know, we're only talking about five councillors, but the fifth one has made all the difference, really. Mm.
Well, there's now opposition motions that can be put, that we've started to see.
Shall we rattle them some more? Because I've got some points.
Rattle away.
Got some feedback.
Sounds intriguing.
I read the report on the CCAP, and what jumped out at me was the section on key achievements. And so it's got a short bullet-pointed list. So this is key achievements from the quarter two of this year. And to go through them, three new posts in City Council to support the delivery of the CCAP, and they've got a zero-carbon workforce development manager. Very nice. The Climate Change Agency secured £2.5 million from the National Lottery for three more years of the In Our Nature campaign.
What?
What's that, listener? You've never heard of the In Our Nature campaign? I'm shocked and appalled.
So we've got to, it's a gamble then, is it? You have to buy lottery tickets.
So that's two of the key achievements. And then as we get down the list, some children visited the Silk Street's low carbon homes development in East Manchester.
In an organised way, or they just went there?
Just had a nice day out. They just turned up. But this was so successful, it made it into a list of just seven key achievements for the quarter.
Oh, Christ.
Two of which were internal fundraising and recruitment, as you've just said. Another two were the internal approval of the CCAP at last month's scrutiny meeting, or the publication of a housing strategy document. So of the three remaining achievements that actually took place outside the council building, we had the Be Green Education Summit and a ribbon-cutting ceremony for the opening of Mayfield Park, which is quite cool in and of itself. But the way it's described as the key achievement was the ribbon-cutting ceremony.
That was the really tricky bit. I mean, building a new park was a piece of cake, but getting that ribbon in two...
So, yeah, I mean, it's true that children are the future, but they're unlikely to be retrofitting any houses anytime soon. So I think this might be what they call a slow news day at MCC.
Obviously, it's important that we talk to young people about climate change so that they feel that, you know, they're involved in the conversation. But it's all like, oh, what do you think we should do, child who has had no play in the destruction of our planet so far? You were just born into it. I find it quite disturbing. And then also with the Mayfield Park, we're still at no net increase in the number of parks in the city centre because they've just started digging up New Islington Green to build offices on.
Yeah, I just encourage not to have bullshit reports that talk about internal reports that have been signed off by the council under the banner of a key achievement. It's just bullshit.
It's pitiful.
The In Our Nature campaign is supposed to be engagement, but it's basically just comms. It's just, you might have seen some of the enormous billboards. There's one on Princess Parkway.
So bright.
Really bright.
So yeah, bright.
Billboard that tells people to leave the car at home and cycle up Princess Parkway. If you've got a death wish, go for it.
Is that one of those billboards that gobbles up energy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was some feedback from a councillor, Doswell. Did anyone else see that, want to talk about it on Active Travel?
Was she annoyed about the fallow field
loop? Yeah. So that's been deprioritised. Mm. So apparently TFGM asked all the wards to look at their projects and reprioritise them based on kind of what stage of progress they were at. And so I guess no one's done any work on the Fallowfield Loop, so it's been deprioritised.
Yeah, it's not in this funding envelope, I think was the term Tracy Roaring used. Basically, it's not getting done until they find more money, essentially.
So an area where we know there have been attacks, particularly against female cyclists.
But to link that more widely, so she, Councillor Doswell talked about Fallowfield and how residents aren't feeling safe to walk or cycle to school, for example, but getting around this idea of active travel. And it ranged, the issues ranged from pavement quality, pavement parking, but there's probably a lot of other issues, like on the Fallowfield Loop Line, people not being safe at certain times, whether that, I think that's improved more recently, but there are concerns around a variety of issues that mean people don't feel safe to walk or cycle on their short journeys. And Tracy Rawlings came back around the Manchester Active Travel Strategy, which is going to be coming to scrutiny in January, I think, as well. Possibly December, I thought, but they said January. And there's going to be a public consultation on that starting now, basically. So it is an opportunity, much as we deride a lot of council activities, an opportunity for us all to feed in on what aspect of our neighbourhoods means we don't feel like we want to, don't feel safe, or can't access active travel or public transport.
Shall we go to one of the public consultations?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's go as a gang.
Live tweet.
Well, because it'll go to public consultation and they'll draw up these plans and then they'll get so watered down as to be entirely meaningless, won't make any difference. Like, I think it was the Levenshulme and Burnage active travel plan that just got published a few days ago that has just taken all of the key things that were in the original draft out of it now. So it's basically, I think they were going to have a Cyclops junction and now they've got rid of that and they're going to have a pocket park on this massive junction. I'm sure everyone will like to just sit there and breathe in the fumes.
So like taking with one, giving one hand and taking with the other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're not comparable though. It's not like a Cyclops junction and a pocket park.
No, but I mean, they're like saying we'll have a new consultation at exactly the same time as the closing down the results of a previous consultation. So they collect the information in and then like sack it eventually because they're very, very comfortable with wasting people's time.
Mm-hmm. Well, where's Councillor Jevons from? Deansgate?
He's a city centre councillor for sure. Deansgate?
Yeah.
So Councillor Jevons chimed in on this around how we change people's attitudes, and the concern is how we provide ways for people to walk and cycle. So it links in, but wider than just Fallowfield. And he gave the example of older pedestrians need places to be able to sit if they're going to be walking. We need more benches, more bike lockups.
Which was great, but before that, he started talking about how in Sheffield they're giving out free parking for people with electric vehicles, and I've just put no in my notes.
I can see these notes, and there is a line of O's after them.
Yeah, I was about to throw my laptop out of the window on that one because giving free parking to people with electric vehicles is not active travel. It doesn't make streets safer for people walking and cycling. It doesn't really make anyone change their behaviour.
And he seems to think that changing people's attitudes is the problem when other councillors have said people would like to, but they don't feel safe.
Mm-hmm. There's a dearth of ideas, it seems, and political will.
When you get hit by an electric car, it doesn't hurt as much. That's when you get hit by a petrol or diesel car. Circling around the same issues. Pavement parking's always one that we come back to. They keep kicking it back to central government. We're supposed to do something on this that hasn't happened. Okay, well, what do we do now then if that's not going to progress at any time soon? And then I think that's when Carol Cully said she was feeling glass half empty. Like, same, glass three quarters empty.
Where did she get her half?
Some people are born with it.
Yeah, but we should go to the, and everybody listening should go to the consultation. I mean, if you go and you hear what the ideas are, particularly if they're coming from other people, and then you hear that they haven't been incorporated, you can keep pushing. Final thoughts on this scrutiny committee from those who watched it?
Clusterfuck. Yeah. Carbon budget is exactly where we've known it to be. We are failing even more than we thought we were. And we normally skip over the CCAPs in this podcast because they're just the council that is on track sort of talking to itself. But there were real points here around, okay, overall emissions are on track for the council, but here are some real challenges to how we're going to do the big changes in the future around active travel, public transport that they really need to get to grips with. So crack on, everyone.
So that wraps up this episode. Next time we'll be talking about biodiversity.
See you on the other side.